Blog Talk Radio.
Get in the groove and let the good times roll. We're gonna stay here till we lose our soul, if it takes all that long. Come on and let the good times roll. We're gonna stay here till we lose our soul, if it takes all that long. The evening sun is sinking low. Clock on the wall says it's time to go. I got my plans, and I got plans for you. I'll tell you all exactly what we're all gonna do. Come on and let the good times roll. We're gonna stay here till we soothe our soul, if it takes all night long. Come on and let the good times roll. We're gonna stay here till we soothe our soul, if it takes all night long.
Mine says 12 o'clock and then mine says 3. Time doesn't mean that much to me. Ain't felt as good since I don't know when. Don't know when I'm gonna feel this way again.
So come on, get in the groove and let the good times roll. We're gonna stay here till we soothe our soul, if it takes all that long. Come on and let the good times roll. We're gonna stay here till we soothe our soul, if it takes all that long.
Might be 6 o'clock, it might be 8. It don't matter that it's getting late. We gonna make the band play one more song. Get in the groove if it takes all night long.
Get in the groove and let the good times roll. We gonna stay here till we soothe our soul, if it takes all night long. Come on and let the good times roll. We gonna stay here till we soothe our soul, if it takes all night long.
All night,
all night,
all night,
all night.
If it takes all night,
all night,
it might take all night,
all night.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Film Miasry Poetry. Hope everyone had a great week behind them, and I hope you all have another great week ahead of them. I like to know that everyone has a good week, always. Hello, Laurent, and how are you tonight?
I couldn't be better, because if I was any better, I would be...
Twin.
How did you know?
Well, I think we should talk about this, because if I was any better, I'd be twins. And could you imagine four of us?
A foursome, wow.
That could be a crazy day.
I think I'm going to take back my statement.
Oh, maybe you should then. Maybe you should. Yep. It's much more than the world can handle. for any... countless number of reasons. So, yeah. But we won't get into all that. But so happy Friday.
Yeah, happy Friday, the Eagle Shits.
Excuse me. I'll get to clear my throat eventually tonight. It'll all be right.
Okay.
I don't want to keep coughing in the microphone and stuff. I'll be bouncing on and off to get rid of it. Anyway, yes, I think we have a nice board tonight. Lots of nice poetry. We got some carryovers. We have some wonderful poems that our poets have put on the board for us to share. And, I think it's going to be a nice night. I really do. We have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 audios for tonight as well. So I think that's pretty awesome. Pretty awesome. Is anything you want to put on the table at the beginning of the show, or am I missing something?
Well, I just hope that our listeners, if you hear a poem, give it a like if you're not going to give it a comment. And if you can, give it a comment, because everybody appreciates comments and likes on their work. That's what I would say.
Yeah, that's a good point. It seems like every time I say that, everybody runs the other direction. You know how that is. Anyway, we have a couple callers on the line, so how about I pick them up and we try and get this party started. Sound good?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Hello, 630. Who's calling, please?
It's probably me. This is Colin, C. Francis Higgins. Hey, Rods. How you doing?
Colin, how are you?
Good
to hear you. Very good to hear you. I'm looking 630, and I'm not, like, it's not processing. I'm like, oh, gosh. I hate when that happens because then I always feel guilty. But, takes me a few, and then I get with the program. And last but not least, we have Wayne Jensen. Hello, Wayne, and welcome aboard.
Hello, guys and gals. Nice to be here.
Hey, Wayne.
Hey, what's up, Lawrence? I haven't heard you for a while. You all right?
I'm here most of the time. Where have you been?
I didn't hear. A couple weeks I didn't see you doing. I don't know. Maybe it was me lost, not you. I don't know. A couple times I was on and you weren't on the air. So I thought maybe you was
sick. Well, yeah, for a few weeks there.
Yeah.
That was just a vacation.
Oh, vacation. Ooh, that's what I need. But nice to hear you again.
Absolutely.
Yep. Well, it's good to have everybody here. And let me go see what I have over here on the magic board. Okay, Laurent, I'm going to start out with this one, I think. I didn't think I had a plan for that. Okay, here we go. Okay, Laurent, whenever you are ready.
Yes, ma'am. This is a poem called Autumn Conquers by Rich F. Sweeping sunsets russet red, but somehow earlier now. Days declining, dying, decaying, nocturnal sensibilities hold sway. Yet still the crisp crimson floating, flitting, falling leaves, landing softly on the verdant deathbed garden lawns of England. The misty morning rain splashed city streets and country lanes. The crisp crimson fallen leaves surrendering to nature's regular rhythms, crunching underneath our faltered feet. Yet still these falling leaves, their beauty colors, warming to our view and to our hearts. This special sedentary season, hiatus, a juncture, the still point marking summer's end, the calm before the winter storm, autumn's russet colors keep us warm. And as the swifts and swallows sing their final season dirges and pack their bags, fly south with purpose, I wander aimlessly with somewhere to be. And oh, those perennial pesky pine cone pelting trees, the that launched their deadly spears, and the horse chestnut tree stopped horsing around, giggling in the wind, gently laughing and sniggering, launching mayhem missiles. Do you deliberately aim to miss, your bombs exploding all around my feet? I can take all that the season throws at me, the wind, the rain, even winter's forthcoming festive snow. But please, pretty please, I do not need your clunker cluster bombs constantly bombarding me. End poem. Ho, ho, ho.
Nice read, Laurent.
Yes, indeed. Well, Wayne, what'd you think?
I thought you did a wonderful job reading it. I was trying to listen to you. I lost my computer, went down for a second. I didn't get to follow along with it, but you did a good job reading. You get the greatest voice in radio. I enjoyed your read. Thank you, good job.
You're very kind, Wayne. And, yeah, this poem is apt for the season. And I guess there's something called conquer pods and the horse chestnut tree drops or spits. And that generated this, which I think is a charming seasonal poem. Well written, as only Rich knows how to write them. Lots of excellent images. Those leaves are always something that draws the poet this time of year. Jean, how did you like it?
Oh, I love this. I thought it was full of wonderful imagery and alliteration. And I think that the tale was just so well told. You know, as Rich always does, he always does a spectacular job. It's always nice to hear his work. I mean, I think he always paints a wonderful picture, you know, which is just makes everything so enjoyable. So well done, Rich. Thank you so much.
I'm not sure I got Colin's comment, though.
Sure, Laurent. I thought this was just a beautiful example of just a pastoral poem. You know, this is a send-up to the kinds of things we saw a couple hundred years ago, which is this celebration of nature and this deep appreciation of this, like, transcendent effect, right, that nature's beauty imparts on us or imprints on us. And I love the subtle rhyme scheme and like Jean said, the alliteration and I just thought this was terrific for how he, you know, brings it from the kind of abstract beauty of nature to his own personal situation and its response to it. And yeah, I really thought this was terrific.
That was a great comment, Colin. Thank you so much. And now that's back to you, Jean.
It's me again. It's me again.
You always. Mm-hmm.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, Colin, can I get you to read the next one for me? This one's by Time Teller.
Sure.
Thank you very much.
Okay, let me bring this up. You can all hear me, correct?
Yes.
Yes.
This is Autumn. Growing old is something nature received from time, a gift of passage, a journey into ambers and reds, ruddy rustic oranges and terracotta, the swelling, shrinking signs upon post and railway fencing, where the wrinkles and crevices of age visibly blend a man-made structure into wild woodland. Youth is barely visible in the background, greenery of an illusionist with this pretense of everlasting. Yet that old fence knows the truth. It's seen the evergreen drop all year replenishing with endless short cycles. Like the past, the ground is littered with the baggage of nature. Old age has become a color blanket covering, like a mother soothing her child. We all cycle, just on differing wavelengths. The fence, a long, slow trajectory until the woodsman replaces it, the trees adding girth every year, maturing into majestic wanderers and paths through the 12-month calendar of renewal, reminding them of their inevitable end way into the futures. And what of the wanderer passing through the picture, flesh that blemishes, puckering, dropping, and wrinkling like paper, bones that get brittle, eyes that see less, and ears that once heard the leaf fall and can no longer. Time is a giver, a teaser, and a player of games. End poem.
Great read.
Well read, Colin. Thank you so much. All right, Wayne, what did you think?
I thought it was a very good poem. It's a great storyline. You know, I don't usually do any paragraph style poetry, but this one seems to work well. He read it well, and it kind of read like a poem, and he did a very good job of this. I liked it a whole lot. Very good job.
Thank you, Wayne.
Mm-hmm.
I like this poem because it reflects age in nature's, age is reflected in nature's face, as far as I'm concerned. Growing old, the colors of autumn, all of those things fit in together because as the world ages, so we age. We have many autumns to enjoy and to see that actually occurring. You know, youth is barely visible in the background, greenery of an illusionist, and that's very fine for spring. But then you get the flesh that blemishes, puckering, dropping, and wrinkling like paper. Bones that get brittle, eyes that see less, and ears that once heard the leaf fall and can no longer. Wow. I love the way this is written. Really good piece. Colin, you read that well. Could you comment, please?
Yeah, you know, this is the first time I've read it, and it's apparent to me that this paragraph structure, this almost, you know, serious pace of this poem is the kind of march of old age, right? There's no pausing, there's no stops, there's no breaks, there's no, you know what I mean? It starts and it just inexorably marches on until its ultimate conclusion, right? Where the images become more intense and the consequences become more severe, right? Like Laurent said, you know, the ears that once heard the leaf fall and can no longer, right? It's the things that are lost and the things that are behind us that are in the same paragraph, but we can't reach back and grab. So it's interesting the way that this is structured. It didn't strike me initially when I read it, but now it strikes me now, right, after reading it. And, yeah, I think it's really terrific and really well done.
Absolutely. And Jean?
I thought this was a beautifully – I thought there were beautifully painted images throughout this piece. I very much did enjoy it, and I thought the tale was so very well told. Colin, you did an excellent read of this. Because at first when I looked at it, I thought, oh, gosh, I wish it was broken down a little more, you know, line breaks and what have you. But the way you read it didn't seem to – you didn't seem to have any problems. You know, you just seem to read right through it, and it turned out wonderful. So, see what I get for thinking. But, yeah, really, really well done. Okay. And, Wayne, did you comment on this one? For some reason, I remember hearing Wayne's voice.
Yes, I did. I did. That's the first one.
Very good. My ears are failing. What happens when you
read it? He kind of did a great job reading it, too. Great job reading it.
I agree. Absolutely. Okay, Wayne, I have one for you to read, if you don't mind. And this is by Chris Bond.
I'll do my best. You see where it is right there. Okay, it's called In Contemplation of Autumn. And it goes like this. Summer finally tails off, and heralded by changes of the days, shorter light and leaves color ablaze. Temperature eases down. Nature creates new carpet on forest ground. Much of nature prepares for winter sleep, a world in seasonal flux between.
Thank you. That was fine. Excellent. Thank you so much. We have a world in seasonal flux betwixt and between, which I find a charming phrase. This is the way the world has been for some time. Summer finally tails off. Shorter light, leaves, color ablaze, temperatures ease down. Much of nature prepares for winter's sleep, brevity that does its job. A brief look at nature, the world. You know, we live in a world where perhaps 10 years from now, this won't be the kind of brevity that we write, because nature will have changed its ways fairly dramatically. Personally, I'd rather see it stay the same. I don't know if we have much hope of that, though. Colin, how about you, my friend?
Yeah, I think, Laurent, that you know, the kind of subtle rhyme scheme here and the brevity of the poem is all about intensity of expression, right? Sharpness here, right? So we have very sharp, you know, pointed expression, which I think is very effective, right? We have 2 3-line stanzas with a 1-line couplet. And there's nothing superfluous here. It's, you know, this is the point, right? Short her light, leaves color of blaze, right? Much of nature prepares for winter sleep. It's nicely sharp and concise and compact, almost like haiku. And in that sense, I really like it. I like what was done here, and I think it's effective.
Thank you, Colin. And Wayne, your comment?
This for brevity, this poem says a whole lot. It's got it's got the seasons, the time, the colors, the temperature, and there's a touch of philosophy in it. I like the way it rhymes too. It has a little bit of rhyme in there. It's a good poem. All the people would be so short. It says a whole lot. It's a good poem. Good job.
Thank you, Wayne. Great comment. Jean?
I think this was a wonderful piece. You know, what a fabulous piece, a perfect brevity. You know, in 7 lines, I mean, he didn't miss a beat, and it was very well well done. You know, great imagery, great use of, you know, color, and he pulled those thoughts all together in this, and I thought that was wonderful. So, Chris, thanks for sharing, as always. Great work. Great work. I used to think I could do a brevity, but I have to get back to the masters of this. There's so many of them. Absolutely. Okay. So, let me see now. The next one I'm going to put up, Laurent, I'm going to have you read for S.V. Masterson. Thank you. Did you hear me?
I did. I did hear you. But
okay,
you didn't hear me. The mute button was depressed. Now it is.
That'll do it.
I will read. Festival in Yellow and Gold. The gold that nature stores within her heart is now yours. The harvest of a year of love and hope and time will disappear. Pull your friends and family close to your side. Share the bounty of harvest time and release the love you held inside. In whispers of a time before, carry on the dreams and wishes of the ones who are with us no more. Cherish these times from the death of winter. They will be hard to find. End poem. All right. Colin, could you start us off?
Yeah, what strikes me here is just the beauty of that first line. I'm sitting there looking at that great first line, the gold that nature stores within her heart is now yours. What a wonderful first line. You know, that can mean so much. And you think about this, the depth of that, the, you know, the expression there. The theme kind of continues where before we saw poems that dealt a lot with the kind of external reality of autumn and the changing season. Now we're looking at more of the interior life. Right, the emotional life, right, of the viewer and the person that's experiencing things, and how that affects them, him or her. And, I think that just the first line carries this poem for sure.
You know, I've got to absolutely agree with you. I was struck by that first line. It gives a very broad look at the world at this time of the year. And then, as you said, he brings it in a little closer with friends and family, but then offers a wish to share the bounty of harvest time and carry on the dreams and wishes of the ones who are with us no more. honoring their memory, certainly. And the last line talks about in the death of winter. I know what he means. I'm not too sure of the phrasing there. The dearth of winter might have been good. No, but that's a lack of winter. At any rate, I found the poem pretty compelling, actually, because it's such a wish for doing what's right as a human being, really, if you think about it. There's only so many things you can do in life to honor those around you. That personification in the first line, though, is really powerful. Nicely done. And Wayne.
Yes. Yeah, this is a lovely poem with a great philosophical view. I like where he says, share the bounty of harvest time. There's lots of tender emotions in this poem, and it has a theme of optimism all through the poem, where it makes you feel warm and loving at the end of the poem. You just feel like he's done something to make you feel like a better person. It's a great warm poem here, and I really enjoyed it. Good job.
Thank you, Wayne and Gene.
Oh, I did hit that button already. Yes. I thought this was a beautiful poem. I really did. So often when we think of autumn, you know, we do think about harvest time, and we think about basically, Thanksgiving-ish kind of ideas. I don't usually fall into that until, you know, like the end of October in my mind. But this was beautifully descriptive and wonderful. Wonderful, wonderful work. So, really enjoyed it. There's a great brevity again. So I'm saying everybody's got such great brevities in this. What a trip. I guess I have to go find another poem now, right? Okay.
Only if you want.
Eugene. No, I don't think that's an option at this point. Okay, let me look at you. Okay, let me make sure I did this right. Yeah, I did. Okay, Colin, can I get you to read the next one for me, please? This is by Sam Sampson.
Sure.
Thank you.
This is Sunlight Filtered. A mighty oak towers above, shades the camp of modern light. Afternoon sunlight filtered, orange was ever my favorite hue. The gentle knocking of acorns, annoyance I endure. Early frost trims the bright leaves, giving the oak a mighty glow. Soon those leaves will drift downward, red and gold, carpet underfoot. Bare branches will reach for the sky, calling winter to come forth. End poem.
Yeah, nice read. Enjoyed that. Wayne, let's start the comments off with you, my friend.
All righty.
Your comment, Wayne?
I'm sorry, I had to mute. I'm sorry. This is another peaceful brevity. It starts off with the mighty oak towers above. That gives us a sense of structure and being safe. And all the way through, it's just another good poem. And he talks about the oak all the way through the poem. And just it's a nice, peaceful poem like the other one was. Kind of like they're all kind of nice and cozy poems tonight. So I enjoyed them all. Good job.
Thank you, Wayne and Colin.
Yeah, again, just like Wayne says, you know, we have brevity and intensity of expression and focus here. There is a complete lack of artifice, right? This is just to capture one beautiful kind of epiphany moment, right, with autumn and everything that includes. And I think it's nicely done here within these, you know, two, three-line stanzas. And I think it's just beautiful and nicely done. It's very vivid.
Yes, indeed. The fact that we have this many brevities for nature makes me think that the brief image, the golden moments, the special moments captured in the out-of-doors are sometimes best rendered in as few words as possible. And I think he demonstrates that in this piece. Lovely, lovely poem on leaves and awesome. Gene, how about you?
think that this was just really an excellent brevity and had beautiful imagery throughout. You know, this last three lines, you know, early frost trims the bright leaves, giving the oak a merry glow. Soon those leaves will drift downward, red and gold carpet underfoot. Bare branches will reach for the sky, calling winter to come forth. You know, it's beautiful, beautiful imagery. I mean, the first three lines are just as wonderful. But for only being six lines long, it says a lot. It really says a lot. So, wonderful job, Sam Sampson. Thanks for sharing with us. That's for sure. Let me this is 10:30. Okay. Now, wait, I think that brings me back to you.
Ready? Time for an encyclopedia.
Yeah. There's all kinds of goodies for open around here. Oh, where did the one I wanted go? It must be gone. Okay, well, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to come on down here and grab this one. Because when all else fails, that's what you do, right? Okay, Wayne, here we go. Whenever you're ready.
Go ready.
By Jack Thompson.
There it is. Jack Thompson. It's called Hogs and Bogs. It goes like this. Fat, hairy hogs are rooting in the bogs. Bogs are muddy, and I'm no fuddy-duddy. Raw steaks is bloody. I'm not chore buddy. Keep wounds bubbly. Bubbly. Son, you're heck of a deep, you're neck deep in a tub full. Bury you beneath reddish rubble. They won't ever find you except some stubble floating in the backlash, pool of fluid. You're hoarding, warning a bear's demise. The mirror is about to catch a smoky fire. Run a ton, you're a son of a gun. Payback breaks bones and throw them stones. Growl and groan in the twilight zone. In?
Thank you, Wayne. It is odd. Pleasantly odd little piece. And I didn't know exactly what to think about the purpose behind it until I read the AN, and he says sometimes poems just bubble up. What can you do? I have been there before. I think most poets have. You get a combination of words and stanzas, and it's not making much sense. And you finish it, and then you read it, and you go, well, you know what? That's not too bad. Don't know what it says, but that's not too bad. And then you go ahead and you post it. I almost get the feeling that's what happened here. Except I got an idea that Colin's going to come up with a little more realistic meaning than I have. Colin?
I'm not sure, Laurent. My catch, this is the first time I've seen it, so my take on this is, you know, we got some fat cat sinking in a bog. Maybe it's a bog of his own making. Maybe it's you know, something that he stepped into, but you know, they're not going to find anything but his stubble when everything is said and done, right? Floating in the blackish pool of fluid, right? Because he was hoarding, right? Warning a bear's derriere, right? So it's an admonition, this poem, with a funny kind of folkish, you know, rhythm and style to it, almost like a song, almost like a rhythm blues song. And it's clever and fun, and there's a lot of ambiguity and abstraction here, but at the same time, there's a lot of concrete imagery. And I think it's fun. I think there's a few different ways to read it, but that's kind of the way that I read it, as a warning to a guy that's got a little too big for his britches.
You know, I had running in my head that kind of thing. I was not confident enough to put words to what I thought, because I wasn't sure that it was even a human or a metaphor for a human being. I had some crazy idea of the hogs that are causing so many problems in Louisiana and other states. So I was looking for meaning in that direction, but you hit the nail on the head. Nice comment.
It could be. You might be right.
No. It made no sense that way, really.
I think it's a humorous little poem. They let him off, and he started typing it, and they just let him off in a carefree direction, and then giving out warnings throughout, like son, you're neck deep in a full tub, buried beneath the reddish rubble. They won't ever find you. That was wild. I don't know. He just gave a good warning right there. It's a nice little poem. It's kind of fun to read, and I enjoyed the poem all the way through. But it's different. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, and the more I read it, the more I agree with Colin. Thank you for that great comment, Wayne, and Gene.
Well, I thought this was funny and clever, and pretty humorous. I got a good chuckle from it. But then I started thinking, wow, maybe I should read this a little deeper, Derriere, was about to catch fire. I got to watch myself. Got to watch my back. We all know about that bear. Don't poke the bear. Anyway, I'm just playing. Great job, Jack. I'm just messing, honest to God. Cute and funny and well done. So thank you so much for sharing that with us. And we do have another caller. Let me pick up area code 619. Who's calling, please?
Hello, this is Michael. How are you doing this evening?
I'm good, Michael.
Hey,
how are you?
Hey, Michael.
I'm doing fine. Yes? Yes, I'm listening.
I'm sorry?
Yeah, I'm listening. Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Your voice is a little soft. I don't know.
Sorry,
if that's
can you hear me now?
I'm
on speakerphone, sorry.
Maybe a little better. Yeah,
that's fine now. Did you have a chance to read that poem or hear it?
No, I just joined in at the moment. Unfortunately,
no problem.
I didn't hear it.
No, we'll catch up on the next pod.
Sure thing.
Lovely
thing.
To have your presence aboard. Gene?
Okay. Wayne, you just read that last one, correct? I'm trying to...
Yeah, Wayne was our last reader.
Thank you, Laurent. Laurent, I'm going to have you read the next one for MK. She put this up last, I guess Tuesday or so, and I did not play it, so I want to make sure I get it in before the night is over. So, thank you very much.
I very rarely get to read any of MK's poems aloud, so for me at least.
Because I collect.
A real treat.
Mm-hmm.
This is called Fill My Eyes Forever Found Within October's Opal Skies. On this autumn day, so brilliant and bright, 100 candles of joy burn. Wishes abound as stars and moon delight, sending gifts of love in return. October chuffs, shaking wild manes, red gold branch shivers, crisp leaf skyward claim, cardinals and blazoned heralds weathering cold, birthday wishes sung, celebrate your name. October smiles, as autumn sun rises, your birthday is finally here. Warmer it would be if I could but see my lovely Jean and my whole dear. October brings an abundant harvest, hugs across the miles make their way. Your supportive heart simply is the best. Wishing you happiest of days. Autumn paints warmly to her brilliant smile, blessing us to reality's dream, granting healing to this lost broken child. Jean, you inspire us on your team. October falls, crisp moisture stings the walls, listen to the sounds of your youth. In yesterday's halls, laughter often calls, the child inside always speaks truth. October breaks in silent burning groves as copper, emerald comprise the depths of autumnal beauteous rose and magic that doth fill my eyes. October winds birth fresh, crisp, thoughtful friend. Her inner lights divinely shine. Selfless caring guided until time's end. Mysterious air surrounds and sublime. October is a month for witches' play. The weather cools down a lot, too. Living for all the treats we crave today. The best people were born here. Woo-hoo! October's wintry opalio's kiss. Marigolds unfold bright flower. Ray- radio waves, moonlight paths reveal each word. Poets chatter, write cozy nectar. October beckons the frosty morning. Leaves from green to red drift to bed. The season brings ruby sky, dawns of warning. Happy birthday, Gene, of the LNP cred. October opal, rainbow stains glowing on coastal hues of blues and green. Leaves grow dim before winter's snow, the flowing soul forever streams. October through September, she lends grace, filling those around her with hope. Stunning in her wisdom, she sets our pace and leads on towards a gentle slope. The birthday message is for Fill My Eyes, also known by those who love her as Jean of October's Opal Skies. Wow. This is a massive combo, a collaboration. And it was an opportunity for all of us to wish Gina happy birthday. And I'm sitting here thinking that, boy, is there egg on my face because I haven't wished you a happy birthday, have I?
No worries. No worries. I appreciate Mindy putting that up. It was a wonderful poem. You guys did a great job.
Well, no, I knew that, and I should have thought about it, and I didn't. So now I feel like poop, cat poop, to be specific. Colin, I'm going to jump to you, please.
Wow, what a terrific send-up. I barely know what to say, but there's such great imagery here, and just this is such a reverent, beautifully done piece here. You know, it's just this just great imagery and just how they're like bending it all towards a specific point. Gosh, I'm trying to look. There's so many great lines. You know, October winds birth fresh, crisp, thoughtful friend. And what's the one that there's one that I really loved here. October opal rainbow stones glowing. I mean, it's like intense, colorful, prismatic kind of imagery here, which is just great. And this meter and the rhyme scheme and everything is so carefully constructed. This is beautifully done. Wow. I mean, wish somebody would write a poem like that to me.
Well, Gene is that special person, you know what I mean? All right, Wayne, please.
Yes, this is a beautiful poem of dedication to another wonderful person, who is Gene. First, happy birthday, Gene. I didn't know it was your birthday. My birthday this month also. This poem did well in for the whole month of October and for your birthday. It's a great tribute. And the way it ended, I like the last little line where she came in and said, Gene of October's opal skies. That's lovely. It's a great way to be known as Gene of October opal skies. It's pretty. It's a perfect rhyming, this poem. It's a touching little poem, and I enjoyed it a whole lot, and happy birthday again.
Thank you. Thank you.
Great comment, Wayne.
Oh, I didn't mean to ignore you a while ago, Gene. I was down there getting a beer, and I couldn't say nothing. I had my headset on, but I couldn't answer.
Oh, I didn't even notice you had ignored me, actually. So I don't know quite what happened, but okay. I didn't really think you had.
All right, Michael, your comment?
I like the imagery of and what October means, poetically speaking. I didn't realize that opal, I believe, is the birthstone for the month. The mention of colors and this birthday wishes and tribute for someone is great. I like it. I like the use of all the different techniques in this poem, and I thought it was well written. That's it.
Thank you, Michael. Gene, how about a little word from you on this wonderful birthday present you received in text from all your friends?
Yes, it's a speech.
This was just, you know, this was such a fabulous poem when you guys all put it together. And I kind of was leery about, you know, playing it tonight because we all know how I get about these things. But it was beautifully done and very, you know, like Colin said, it's just beautiful imagery throughout. I mean, there's not really much there's nothing to be taken away from. Each stanza is just beautiful and very thoughtful. And I want to thank everyone who did contribute to the verses within. It definitely is a pretty amazing piece. And kind of glad when you pulled it out and busted it off and said, here we go. That's what made me do it, because I knew she'd be mad at me if I didn't have it yet. I cannot have that. But beautifully read. Thank you, Laurent. And thanks for the comments, guys. And thank you again, everybody who contributed to this poem. What a beauty. Pretty special piece. Gosh, I don't know where I'm going. I know where I'm going. I had myself turned around for a minute. Okay. Can I get you to read the next one for us?
Who?
Colin. Sorry.
Sure.
Thank you.
Burning skies set afire. Rolling mountains glow with a flaming flourish. Lush valley greens give way to crisp citrus yellows and exotic burnt oranges, showcasing the rich sugars of the previous year. Breezes blow through mountain passes, showering passers-by with life's last flickers of autumn's earlier days. Brown and red, orange and yellow, the leaves pile high like premature snow around each scenic turn. Soon, mountain splendor turns to coal black and ash, waiting for the purification of winter's first snow. End poem.
Nice read, Colin. Nice read.
Very nice read, as a matter of fact. What I like about these particular poems, for instance, Burning Skies Set Afire, is the individual takes that people have on autumn and the visions and what they see. Then they gift us those visions, splendid visions of beauty, of splendor of nature. And here and there, instead of just description, we get some very, very nice lines. And in this particular one, that last stanza, soon mountain splendor turns to cold black and ash, waiting for the purification of winter's first snow. I like the idea of snow purifying the natural world as we see around it. And it's true, because autumn at times is not very pretty, but when that first layer of snow goes down, everything turns white and pure and angelic. It's awfully pretty, awfully beautiful. Michael, let's start with you on the comments.
Yes, hi. I like this poem. This poem also uses color to describe an image. And I agree with the previous reviewer that the last stanza is pretty expressive with talking about how the snow kind of changes things, the scenery. All these colors give way to the white of the snow, especially during the fall. And I also like the little illustration picture with the poem. It kind of enhances the poem. And I really think it was well written. Very good. Congratulations.
Thank you, Michael. And Wayne, please.
Yes, it's a great picture of the end of autumn with all its wonderful colors. And the breeze showering passerbyers by with life's last flicker of autumn's earlier days. I can see the light going through the leaves as it moves with the wind now. It's kind of just a perfect little statement right there. And the last days of autumn will be here pretty soon, it looks like. And it's a little bit sad just thinking about the snow and the winter coming, but it's a great job on this poem. Very colorful and very good job.
Thank you, Wayne. Fine comment. And Colin, please.
I think there's some great subtlety here. Which is wonderful in any poem, but you know, I see kind of what Laurent was saying with this idea of winter coming in and purifying or correcting or dousing something that, at least to me, is flaming or out of control. Something that's pulling from previous experiences and is hot and is passionate and is intense and is potentially destructive, and yet the winter snows are coming in, the cold weather is coming in to put it out, almost like a flame, right, that's within somebody or within a certain situation. And so I see something like meta in here that's really interesting, right? That's really deep and subtle. That's within the whole scheme of the poem here that I really like, and I point out in my comments.
Excellent comment. Thank you so much. And Jean.
Well, I think this was a beautiful piece. What a wonderful use of colors throughout, and definitely beautiful images were painted. And I really enjoyed it very much. And Colin, that was a great read. Thank you for that. Okay. Wayne is going to bring me to you for the next one, so if you'd be so kind.
I'll see what I can do with it. Let me see where we at here. There it is by Jean Comed. Okay, this is called These Colors Blind Me. Colors blind me. I only partake in flavorless tones, taste. My angry heartbeat makes me want to choke, palms on my chest. I scream, what the holy fuck is really going on here? But they say it's okay. And the colors, yes, they are pretty. And the leaves raked in the yards do make them look more put together. Although, along with my OCD, agoraphobia, these medications, all this medication at this time of year doesn't help. Takes my breath away. Hands around my throat, squeezing, and larynx. And larynx may well lie down in the road with the leaves while they blow across the street because I'm invisible. My voice is shoved down my throat with falling leaves, dead leaves, like human bodies, decay from one color to the next until we're all simply dust. But it's okay, right? You put your pumpkins, rake your leaves, bag the evidence of the tree death, pass out your flaky treats, smell your mask, covers their faces. All the while, I'm still lying in the middle of the damn road, waiting to be spattered by a vehicle. Ian?
Wayne, outstanding read, my friend. I like that.
Wow.
Ooh, what a poem. Well, let me see. Politeness tells me I have to start with Colin.
What an amazingly quirky poem. I'm looking through this. I'm like, wow. this is so out there in a good way, though. I mean, here again, we're going deep into the interior life, right, and the reaction somebody has, right, to a certain natural phenomenon or environment or, the things around them. And it's so incredibly subjective, right, with the OCD and the agoraphobia and all these things and feeling perturbed or upset about the decay, right, that's all around the poet, right, the writer. And, just not being able to process it all and being just, like, completely overwhelmed. It's kind of fascinating. I mean, it's really interesting. I've never seen – this is so different than everything we've read, and it's fascinating, but it's delightful at the same time.
Thank you, Colin. Jen's Gone Mad, the poet, describes herself as a dark poet, always drawn to the hurt and broken, and she defines herself as one who is hurt and broken, and by God, if this poem doesn't demonstrate that with her words, I don't know what does. Surprising first stanza, colors blind me. I only partake in flavorless tones, tastes. Well, here's someone who's cut all the richness of life right out, or had it cut out for her, I'm not sure. But boy, she's angry, she doesn't know what's going on, but people placate her. And she begins to comment on the leaves raked in the yards do make them look more put together. But it doesn't help. She claims that she's invisible and might as well lay down in the street with the leaves. My voice is shoved down my throat with fallen leaves, dead leaves, like human bodies decay. It's almost as if the death of the leaves affects her in a corresponding manner. But to have it end with her in the street, waiting to get splattered by a vehicle, well, I love Colin's description of quirky. That's exactly what this is. But there's some depth to it. There's a darkness to it. And it's well handled. But the way it's presented, even though it's sad and almost desperate, it made me smile. Maybe it's the way it was written. Maybe it's the way it looks. I don't know. Wayne, please.
Yes. Well, this was some poem. And with the words capitalized, some of them were not knowing what rhythm it was. It was a trip going through this. But it seemed like she had some kind of allergies or something bothering this time of year or something. She says, it takes my breath away, hands around my throat, squeezing my larynx. Might as well lie down in the road with the leaves and while they blow across the street because I'm invisible. That's she's just down on herself and just having some kind of little problem. I don't know, but it's fun to read. It's a fun poem. I think it's a really fun poem, really. Even though she's kind of putting herself down and she wants to get run over and be splattered by a vehicle, still it's just a funny, fun poem. I enjoyed reading it. It was a good job on this poem.
That was a good comment too. Thank you, my friend. And Michael, please.
I thought it was pretty clever how, and a little bit like a little sarcastic, but also a little bit humorous. I don't know. That's what I got from it. But let's see. Sorry, I'm a little nervous. The use of these different images of colors and pumpkins and. References to Halloween and this time of the year, the fall. I thought that was really good. I could relate to some of this. I thought the last stanza was pretty funny, and I think the author of this poem did a pretty good job expressing this raw emotion about all everything here. So I like it. I give it a thumbs up.
We all do. Very good job on that comment. She certainly, you're right, she certainly does illustrate how she feels. And Jean, please.
Well, this definitely was a unique, I saw a comment that there was like two sides to this poem. I'm not exactly sure, but it definitely has a lot to say. And it seems a little harsh to me, but that's just my interpretation. And that's the beauty of poetry. We all have our own. And I think that it was clever. I mean, at first I thought it was a word bank, and then I realized that it wasn't because I was trying to figure out why so many words were just all in capitals. So I kind of had to try and put that together. Then I tried to read just the capitalized words. And it kind of almost pulls its weight. Then I went back and I started to try and read the smaller spaced words to see if that also worked. And for the short distance that I made it, it really did. So it kind of almost struck me as it could be two poems in one, which is clever and its own merit. So good job for that, Jen. And thanks for sharing with us. Absolutely. Okay. Next, I'm going to put up a piece by Titus Llewellyn, and there's a sample for that, so let me put that up. So here we go.
Oh, no.
First angel, Wayne Jentz, an angel like no other. Dear Wayne, a dedication which you wrote for me rise for Titus. Stands out as the most beautiful gift any poet could give another. In fact, I do recall you slowed the tempo down to give it that classical feel. By doing away with the allegro, which is your normal style, you have indeed taken a fair proportion of yourself away to privilege me further. It is a priceless piece of art for which I can imagine someday it truly being a classic. winsome words these, the rise for Wayne would allow us all to follow amicably. A gentle breeze to contrast with your calling card, the etc. yawns quietly. Before the break of dawn can even think, a hint of a lay, never to disturb the sprites. For where they lay, the dew did settle upon Adelon. Spirit image of one who walks this earth, you reign to a dear. Justify ourselves, for we, to see through his eyes, will manage to sarage enticing sprites. Their vagrant charms have moved us with a credence not to tempt the storm from above, but then it is the softest silken gown. Tiny droplets forewarned to be admired, the test of time is sheer delight. Where sprites are thought to persist, with the stillness so gracefully low assigned orbs, do now rise to the words from Wayne. It's merely panacea, your love. It does absorb the storm which he speaks of as pure fantasy. Never in my wildest dreams to fulfill endless dreams can find transition. Evanescent words do think loudly, as your soothing words do surface. Joy to the world, for here we have angels in the making. Incorporeal heart, enlighten me to see before it happens what may account all human life. Nuances gather to express subtle differences, bound by love's devotion, touching distance between friends, my last in keeping with the present. An angel who, like no other, he conjoins in the caring for the soul I alter, notably to shake the vows we hear, consonants we taught to being driven, a powers hereby justify a means to substantiate relations to another era, next to consign wisdom, both mindsets extend to which sin qua non, gentlemen agree, glasses raised to praise your delightful free thinking, exactly your sense of whereabouts, I declare, given the common grace levitates attachments, dreams if dreams are to aspire the highest level, latent spirals not yet these, imaginations wane, for you I will unravel, indelible ink will not be removed, for indemnity to provide for our missi. Kepler's law accounts for the elliptical stance between friends, to speak emollient where, varying styles remind us to think of the clouds above. Next us, links us too with those who've helped to aspire. I love you, man. Offering a prelude as such godly charms, our status bearing incognito. On the side of loving kindness, where once we began, a personal credo tolerates the distinguished depth of all emotions, of what they consist. Heavy hearts would choose to fill the many clouds to carry and fetch. Enamored by the way you enchant others, Wayne, so divine and sincere. Rays from the sun do engage the scrolls as words become more clearer.
Wow, that is a hell of a piece.
Man.
But Wayne, it pleases me to see that you earned your wings before you shuffled off your mortal coil.
Oh my gosh.
Wow.
Titus is a writer of rare quality. I'd like to get Colin's take on this.
All I can say is that after I die, I want Titus to write my eulogy.
I hear that.
It make it like an hour long. Just like, yeah, I mean, This is a great this is the first time I've seen this, but and that there's a lot to unpack here, and that this is just wonderful, this whole thing. But this is just such a great a dedication appreciative expression, right, of one poet to another, which is what this appears to me. And it took me a minute to kind of digest and figure out what was going on. But, just the wonderful, intergalactic kind of metaphysical, you know, imagery here, and pulling everything together in these wild images, and you know, it's just, it's terrific, and there's so much here, and it's so much fun, and I love right in the middle of it where he has like the little toast where he says clink, let's clink the wine glasses together, like, you know, let's go from the heights of metaphysical poetic glory and let's just toast, right? which I think is great. So again, I got to sit here and read this like over and over again to like unpack it all. But I love it. It's just so much fun.
Great comment, Colin. Thank you. And Michael, what did you think? Are you with us, Michael? On mute, perhaps. Or unfortunately drop. Gene, is Michael still with us? Well, does anybody hear me?
I can.
All right. Well, then I'll tell you what.
It's just the poet.
Wayne, I'm going to ask you to react to this this poem written in your honor.
Well, when I was told Tuesday afternoon that Titus wrote a poem about me, I thought, oh, Lord, what's this going to be about? So I didn't get a chance to read it Wednesday afternoon, so it's kind of new to me, too. I mean, here it's Wednesday afternoon. I'm amazed at it. It's a nice little brevity. He did you a poem like this, too, and they're all in his book of angels, so I can't wait to get a copy of the book because he wrote about Fill My Eyes and You and 90 points he wrote about. So I'm just amazed that he put me in there. I don't need to be in that group of people. I don't think I deserve that, but he's awful nice to me. He's a nice friend, and I like him a whole lot, but he did a good job with this. I'm kind of amazed.
Absolutely true. You know, I'm going to kind of take Colin's point of view. There's a lot to unpack here. It's a gorgeous piece, and he writes English in a seminal manner. It's truly quite extraordinary. But what I really liked is that his ultimate take on you is that of a gentle, caring soul, which I thought was really nice. If that's the worst thing anybody's going to say about you, then you've done a good job. Gene, how about you? Well, I think Gene may have left us in the lurch.
we'll have to sing a song or something.
Well, not normally. There's something going on in the background. These poems that Titus does, you know, you'd think that maybe three or four stanzas, a phrase, maybe more, a little bit more, and you can encapsulate how you feel about someone. But boy, Titus takes a world view on this.
He does.
He spreads everything so widely, you know.
He does it with everybody. He's just such a good, great. He writes so well. It's just incredible the way he writes, and his words are just immaculate. I didn't hear the SoundCloud first. I read it. I thought, I wonder what he's talking about because his words are over my head. A lot of words. I went back and heard it, and then it made more sense when I heard him read it. But when he read it myself, I thought, what is this all about? So I was going to have to get a dictionary out of thought. So he's an excellent poet, and I think he's one of the best around.
I always feel inferior.
Great voice.
Whenever I hear any of his poems, because I know I'll never be able to write as well as he does. He's just in a class by himself as far as I'm concerned.
He is.
He is.
He's something.
Now, let's see.
I'm honored as I can be. I'm honored.
Gene, are you back? No, Gene. Well, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I am going to jump over and pull a poem. Because after all, I can do that. And I have to be on the right page to do that. I don't see. Well, yeah, she said she's going to be back 10 minutes ago.
Something hey, Lauren, I got about 15 minutes before I got to leave. If it helps any.
Well, okay. I'm going to be real selfish then. I'll simply post. We'll do my piece and then Colin's piece.
Okay.
You'll be able to hear both of those before you go. I hope.
Okay. That'd be great.
Yeah, give me just 1 second here, please. Dig mine up. Okay. There it is. Let me just get the link. into the room. Okay. And it's up. And this is called If by Chance. Drifting, disjointed, at the vagary of mercy and wind, perhaps foolish in my seventh decade in search of self, I feel there should have been other me's, like avatars, living in a playing card deck of alternate dimensions, whole thing held in one hand. Isn't there a place, a venue of the unborn, who so massively outnumber the born, where another me is waiting, all unknowing, quickening child of an immortal soul, ready to come up aces? Such search is long in the tooth, a gentle rasp on my humanity, holding the lantern aloft, looking for the random angels of companion spirits living between jacks and queens. They exist in here, I'm certain, shuffling pasteboards lazily. Whoops! Cosmic 52-card pickup. This may take a while. End poem. And Wayne, I'll ask you to start.
Now, this is a great ponderance of one's life in the seventh decade, and I'll be starting my seventh decade here in 2 years. So I know where you're coming from there. So if you look back, and it seems like there's so much more you should have done, but you've done so much. But you know, you just want to try to make sense of it all. And it's a very good poem, and hey, got me thinking a lot. We're getting up there in 7 years. When we're 105, we're going to look back and think it was a great time. Great
yes,
job.
Indeed. Thank you for those kind words, my friend. And Colin, please.
Yeah, I think, Laurent, that I thought when I read this, I thought of identity, right? There's a crisis of identity in the 70th year. There's the idea of possibility in the playing card deck, where one out of 52 possibilities is always present. And there's also the idea of calamity, right, where the cards could all come fumbling out of somebody's hand, some metaphysical hand, and where everything needs to be picked up again. You know, I think this is wonderful in the sense that it's the frontiers of abstraction here, right? The hand holding the deck that defines the person and all that person's possibilities, and all the paths, all the possible paths and all the possible futures. So it's fascinating in the sense that, that this can be put in poetic form, and it's kind of spiritual, kind of not, kind of metaphysical, kind of philosophical. It rides the rails between these different ideas. But it's wonderfully subtle, and I just think it's terrific. There's so much to unpack here. I could just sit here and look at it and come to all kinds of conclusions. But I think that I'm 51 now, and I think that poetry is one of the only things where I think you actually become better as you get older. And I really think that I think you're able to pull from your experience, right, and you're able to pull from the world and express it in verse, right, better than you were when you were 18 or 20 years old. And I think this is a classic example.
Thank you, my friend. Thank you. Now, while Wayne is still with us, I'm going to put up your poem, Colin, and ask you to give it a read.
That's exactly sure. What I was going to do. Good
oh,
job.
There we go. She's back.
And I'm better than before. Not really.
This actually has a subtle autumnal theme, but you got to look for it.
Whenever
anyway,
you're ready, Cole.
Yeah, this is Emily. This is the chorus of cicadas amid dark, sweltering alcoves, crowding broken windows and laughing with lilacs, spitefully calling at every glance and from every empty corridor. This is the rot world wrangling and the limits of empty urban courtyards, of disintegrating gardens, and hesitant bird songs of crashing elevated trains. This is your final form amid broken plastic records and old boxes of Chinese food while the city struggles against encroaching dust in your dancing image. This is the moment between tracks, when tattered curtains freeze and wait, and the blood flows in my veins, waiting for your next bare footstep on this forgotten expanse. Faceless and oblique, you're lost to me, moving between mirrors and fractured sunlight, while crackling sound gives way to a different music. End poem.
Great read, Colin, and a great write. I had to read this 2 or 3 times to begin to get the sense of what I thought you were getting at. I see a raw cityscape, its images flitting and groaning in all its leathery majesty. Faceless and unique, you are lost to me. She is lost to you amid the tattered, wrought world of fractured sunlight. And approaching dark, there's a sadness in this piece that observes your world with biting metaphors and an empty finality. And I thought it was an excellent piece, but after I had written that, I was unsure whether or not that is actually what I wanted to say, because when you say this is the wrought world wrangling and the limits of empty urban courtyards, if you go to the stanza before, that speaks of the chorus of cicadas, the broken windows, the empty corridors. It's almost like that's the world around you, and everything in it kind of bothers you. Spitefully calling at every glance and from every empty corridor, you know, you've lost Emily. She is gone. Faceless and oblique, you are lost to me. I don't know whether the word resent is the right word, but you it seems to me like there is a reason for the tone of your voice, which is not defiant, really. It's more, well, like I said, kind of a finality, an empty finality, because I see no threat in it, but just that the sadness of missing Emily. I don't know if I'm totally off base here. If you want to say a word or two about your poem, you're welcome.
I think that's great comments, Laurent. I think you're on the right track there. I think that's good.
All right, we'll go with that. Wayne, how about you?
Well, I was similar to that. I said, well, this is amazing. You went from the end of the cicada cycle to the statement towards Emily, as the title said. There's a blend here where you left the wonderful bugs and brought in another theme of loss of love and time, it seems like. It's great and a little sad, but it's a great little job on this poem here. I loved it. Great job and great and wonderful. Loved it.
Thank you, Wayne. And Gene, how about you?
Thanks, Wayne.
Welcome.
Gene?
This off mute this time. Now I'm here, but I'm off mute. I thought this was an excellent poem, Colin. And what was crazy about it is that when you started to read it, beside the line, of course, or cicadas, as it went on, you know, I could see a progression of an exit throughout the words. But in the same respect, in the back of my mind, I was hearing some type of like a classical music, and I don't know, there wasn't any one specific, but in my head I could hear this kind of broken sound, and the only thing I can attribute that to would be classical music, and I think that it was pretty amazing that it actually drew that from me, because I'm not one to listen to much classical music, number one. When I do, it's few and far between. But I thought it was funny that it took me down that path. I have to say here, you know, this is the moment between tracks, when tattered curtains freeze and wait, and the blood flows in my veins, waiting for your next bare footstep on this forgotten expanse. You know, and then that last stanza just really, like, tied it up. You know, faceless and oblique, you are lost to me. Moving between mirrors and fractured sunlight, while crackling sound gives way to a different music. I thought that was a pretty incredible ending, and very well done, well written.
Thank you, Jean. Appreciate it.
You're welcome. I did find that music thing in my head, though, to be pretty intriguing, because I'm not usually one to go that way. And that definitely hit all those notes. Okay. Well, fellas, I'm going to put up Wayne Jensky. And Wayne, you want me to play the SoundCloud or you want to read it?
Yeah, I do play SoundCloud. I like the SoundCloud on this one.
Okay, you got it. Let me find my name here. I didn't do that one. Here we go.
This is called Mother Nature's Recovery. Tormented trees tilt from tossing a tremendous topaz tornado. Weeping inward eyes blink after catching sky's yellowing sun halo. Whirlwind blows ebony silhouettes from forest flames in maple's treetop. Plantation pollinator bees calling on vegetation patches and vineyard crop. Mother Nature with red blood-stained cheeks walks down recovery roads. Funnels hope through fingertips to stimulate glittering fireflies and toads. Arms in air, snapping sweet cluster of dogwood clover till green. Borders the edges with giant citrine borders, with tints of tangerine. Her palms light with neon orange marks, so shrubs get watering waves. Covers flowers, roots, and willow with goldenrod perfume to see how it behaves. In shadows, men trespassers leaf through rocks for honey ivy with lust. Guy with Milo groves gaze at melancholy moon as artifacts slowly rust. And I don't know. I get all these instrumentals, and I go through there. I find one that matches what I write, and I use it. So I'm not sure what it was.
Well, I'll tell you what. What great writing you have gifted us. Tormented trees tilt from tossing a tremendous topaz tornado. Weeping emerald eyes blink after catching sky's yellowing sun halo. I don't mean to pick on the first stanza automatically, but it's such a great introduction to the poem itself, which looks at, first of all, you used all 84 word bank words. This one.
Yeah, he's always word bank.
That's remarkable in and of itself, and you use those words in this remarkable piece that speaks of nature and recovery so beautifully. What was this, a 10 or a 9.5?
It was a 10. It's my second highest rated poem ever, by the way. The second
nice
highest rated poem I ever had.
Always got to give you a little thrill. A little thrill.
Yeah, it did a little
all
bit.
All right,
enjoyed it.
Colin, how about you, my friend?
Yeah, I think that this, I mean, just the imagery here is absolutely gorgeous. I mean, it's just lush. And, it is almost like Flaubert. You know? It's so, like, I mean, you just get this explosion of color and image and you know, verb phrases and action, all these different things going on and you know, Mother Nature's Recovery, right, which is the title of the poem. And you know, Wayne, I think this is brilliant in the sense that everything you have here, there's nothing superfluous, everything counts, which is really, really hard to do. right? It's just like bam, bam, bam. Like every single word is important. There's nothing superfluous here. So this is a terrific effort. Very well done.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I appreciate that. Ding dong. Is anybody out there?
What happened?
I guess
we
Ron took a... I don't know where he went.
I'm sorry.
Ron, are you
there? Going, Gene, it's your turn. I'm talking to mute, of course.
Yeah. Well, Wayne, I thought that this was a wonderful, wonderful job with this poem. Nice use of the word bank. I didn't realize it was a word bank poem at first, and then Laurent said 84 words or something like that. Like, get
words.
Out of here. Good heavens,
yeah, I can't believe it.
Yeah, I think you really did an excellent job with that. It's hard to take word banks and make things seem very seamless. I mean, unless the word banks are set up where they all run together. That's not usually how
yeah,
that happens. But,
no.
But definitely wonderful imagery. And, yeah, I thought it was just really, really well done. So,
thank you very much.
Excellent.
I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Okay. You are very welcome. Now I got to figure out where I'm going next. I guess I have to read something. That would be a unique experience. son of a gun. Okay. And the next one I'm going to put up is by Sapphire Rose. And I'm going to read that one. I think. Okay, this is called Unbreakable in Love. Meet me in the calm waters of euphoria, where light serenades the dark depths, where sea French kisses the starry sky. Stimulate those unawkward, unawakened places deep down inside. Caress my intellect, seduce the whole of me. Your voice seeps into every crevice, your presence undeniable. Eyes meet for the first time. Your stare penetrates, invigorates our mouths, longing to savor each ardent kiss. We are unbreakable in love and fun.
Well read, Jean.
Thanks.
This piece is kind of a brevity. This one has a depth to it that I really like, especially in the second stanza. Stimulate those unawakened places deep down inside. Caress my intellect. Seduce the whole of me. And I love this stanza because it really speaks, you know, to the whole woman, not just part that may be physical, but, you know, speak to me, caress my intellect. And I think that is so important because if you have a relationship that is physical, emotional, and intellectual, odds are that you will indeed be unbreakable in love, the last line in this great little brevity. Appreciate it very much, Sapphire Rose. You did a nice job with this. Colin, please.
Yeah, Laurent, I love that first line. Meet me in the calm waters of euphoria.
Mm.
Right? The paradox there. You don't expect the waters of euphoria to be calm. Right? So I immediately imagine somebody who is inwardly excited. Right? But outwardly calm. So that's a brilliant first line. Very nicely done. And I also like the subtle eroticism here, you know, with at one point where it says, you know, your voice seeping in every crack and your stare penetrates. You know, there's certain, you know, kind of erotic elements here that are kind of under the surface of the poem. But it's a great kind of passionate, erotic dedication, right, to the beloved. And nicely done, but I really like that first line.
Agreed. Thank you so much, Colin. Wayne, are you still with us by any chance? If not, I'm going to send it to Gene.
No. He dropped. So I guess you said, if not, you were coming to me, because I didn't hear what you said.
Yes, I'm coming to you for your comment.
Yes, yes, yes. Sapphire Rose, I thought this was just beautiful. You know, the imagery was wonderful. The just, I thought it was so well expressed. And you know, it was funny, Colin, because you said, you know, you couldn't imagine the, let me find it, let me, calm waters of euphoria. You said you couldn't picture those being that calm. And you know what I envisioned almost kind of sort of when I read that line myself was almost like an amniotic sack, you know, where you're just in there and you're together and floating and just, I don't know, that's what I got from that. And I thought, yeah, I could kind of see it both ways, I guess. So it's kind of interesting. I think, you know, whereas C, French Kisses the Starry Sky, wonderful imagery in that respect, definitely different and unique and just really well done. And it really kept my interest down to the very beginning, you know, most definitely a wonderful piece. So thank you, Sapphire Rose, as always. Great job. Mm-hmm. Okay. Back I go to the other side. Okay. Laurent, can I have you read the next one? And then I'm going to hit another sound. Thank you very much. Now I have to just find the room. Here we go.
All right. This is called Falling, Falling, Fall by Kel Smiles. Crimson, golden, magenta, twigs snapped release, swirling confetti regatta, maelstrom of colors storm, falling, 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 wind swishing in, out, around, fusion of confusion and sporadic action, green, yellow, brown, promenade skyline fashion show, falling, 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 suntanned, sandstone, lime, bristled, briskly tumble, winded blizzard autumn time, crunchy crinkle under footfalls, and sharply acrid earthly incense, falling, 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 apple cider, bonfire evenings, golden orange harvest moon, leaves piled high for child's play, and briskly blowing cooler air, falling, falling, autumn colors. And falling.
Nice read, Laurent. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. I really like this repeated phrase, falling, falling, falling. We get the action of the leaves and the twigs and the swirling confetti regatta. There's a maelstrom of colors. We have the wind swishing in and out. We have the promenade of a skyline fashion show. We have the crunchy crinkle. We have the winded blizzard autumn time. All those things, and those things seem to be moving and moving quickly, almost a tornado of images. And then they're interrupted every four or five lines by the repetitive line, falling, 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 which to me slows it down and brings us to that next stanza, and then that repeats. It's really a beautiful piece. I like this a lot. Alan, please.
Yeah, I had the same kind of impression there, you know, with this refrain or this falling fall, you know, and it's very musical, right? I can picture this being turned into a song, right, with that refrain. And obviously there's just some wonderful imagery here. I mean, I think one part really stands out to me is suntan, sandstone, lime bristled, briskly tumble, winded blizzard, autumn time, crunchy crinkle under footfalls. I mean, that's just it's just intense. There's nothing superfluous there. It's just you know, image after image, you know, piled upon each other like this kind of mountain of you know, of images, really. And yeah, it's really nice. I really loved it.
Thank you, Colin. And Jean, please.
Well, you know, I thought this was a great a great poem. It was full of imagery, and I have to, you know, say that it was well done in that respect. But I thought there were wonderful pictures painted in each stanza, and I think they tumbled kind of like the leaves in the wind. You know, each stanza just kind of rolled out. You know, after the falling, you knew you got a new set, and it just kind of tumbled out like the autumn leaves. And I, you know, maybe I'm a little crazy, I don't know. But that's the way I saw it, and I really thought it was a great job, Kel. Wonderful work.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Jean. That's a great comment.
Okay. Well, let me see now. Okay, got to type in one. Thank you. Okay, the next one I have a SoundCloud for. And this is by Budo.
Ability to find rhythm within words and then repeat them appropriately. I don't know. I always love one of Monroe's pieces. They're a really nice break in the show. Colin, how about a few words from you?
Yeah, I was looking at this, and I think the interesting thing is that, you know, we have this refrain that you're way over in your heart, you're way over your heart, you're in way over your heart with me. And I think earlier in the poem, he says I'm in love with you from you to start. Like, in other words, it goes from him being over his head to the lover, right, being over her head. Which is good songwriting material, right? How it flips back and forth. And obviously it's got a very song-like quality to it. And I think it works really well. I mean, I think it could be, you know, obviously has been turned into a song here. And it's interesting. With the chorus and everything, and like Laurent says, it writing a song is very different than writing a poem, right? There's different mandates with a song and how it has to kind of, you know, basically blend into the music and has to have these refrains and this kind of formal structure. And I think it achieves that quite well. I think it's quite good.
Excellent comment, Colin. Thank you so much. Gene, back to you.
I think this is a wonderful collaboration between the two. I think the lyrics were well done. I'm going to have to assume that CRL 17 may have written them, and then Budo may have made them a little more lyrical. I'm not sure about that, but I think they did a phenomenal job, and I want to thank them both for allowing us to listen tonight. Yeah, it was wonderful. So thank you. Hey, Jeremy, welcome aboard. Hey, Naomi. Okay. Colin, can I get you to read the next one for us?
Sure.
Thank you.
Is this Decay?
Yes, that's the one.
Okay. All right. This is The Cave by Daniel Deschino. Faith is a voluntary blindness. For those with a vision, it's purposeful ignorance. For the wise and the educated, it is also sanity for those insane with knowledge. I have had faith only to discover that it was faith that had me. And this faith has slowly died through the years like a loving relationship from neglect. And as I distance myself from faith and stray in sin and my outgoing love affair with wisdom and knowledge, I do the one thing that faith will not tolerate. I contemplate faith itself and easily see what it is not. It is not nature. Nature does not need faith because nature does. The sun comes up, the grass grows, animals kill, bird flies, disease spreads, flowers bloom, hurricane strike, and the sun comes up every single day. I don't need faith in the heavens. They always are. They are always stars. There's always a universe, and there's always a humbling threat from above. I do not need faith. I do not have faith in God because God does not require faith. God is. Whatever God is, for me to think I can come close at all to understanding the nature of God based on words of humans, either spoken for the arrogance of confidence of the written words of unproven origin, except for the words themselves. Well, how can I? I, myself, am only human, which is the ironic duality of faith, humanity. The words of humanity lie, they must, because we kill over their interpretation. The vision of humanity destroys because it has created what it is today. And the actions of humanity disappoints because they have over and over and over. And the faith killer, that has burned my spirit to ash and shames me into a lost specter hiding in the shadows that turns every morning sunrise into a frightening vision of what could be is the human I am and the errors I have and will decide to make of me. I will then be regret, the paralyzing foe, that self-affliction yet to come. How can I have faith in anything when I don't have faith in me? End poem.
Bravo. That really was. It's not an easy piece to read, but you really did a great job on that. This is probably my favorite from Dan Ducino. I enjoyed the writing more than that. I enjoyed the message, the decay of years that I think sometimes inhabits all of us. You know, we are given our faith when we are very young and told stories that seem rational at the time. But as time progresses and we get older and we begin to see things for the second, third, fourth, fifth, tenth, 20th times, we begin to see what faith is and what it isn't. And I like the way he addresses faith through himself and telling us how his faith has slowly died through the years like a loving relationship from neglect. And the further he takes himself from faith and strays in sin, he begins to really see what faith is and what it isn't. And I love that point of view. In the stanza, it is not nature. Nature does not need faith because nature just does, and then offers examples, and as well as the heavens. I do not need faith in the heavens. They always are. And, you know, they always are does not stray too far from that immortal statement, I am. He does not have faith in God because God does not require faith. God is whatever God is. I just absolutely agree with all of his points of view in this. Really a brilliant look at man, at himself, because he, in the last sentence, how can I have faith in anything when I don't have faith in me? He has lost his faith in himself. And that may be the reason for him losing faith in everything else. So we have to ask ourselves, how valid is his rationale, given that? I think it's very valid. I thought this was a brilliant piece. Colin, you read that so well. What did you think?
Yeah, there's so much here, Laurent. I did comment on it, and I think the one thing that struck me immediately was, you know, it starts off as this kind of commentary on faith, in this kind of agnostic or you know, kind of exploring these kind of atheistic issues and everything. And you think the poem is going one way, and then suddenly it turns another way. You know what I mean? It becomes more personal. It becomes deeper, and it becomes more profound. So what appeared as kind of an exploration of abstract theological or metaphysical concepts then gets taken down to the personal level, where the poet, you know, it admits that he doesn't have the answers, right? That the only thing that he does know is that he's to some degree abandoned in the universe, right? Where the God that doesn't need him doesn't require the faith. He doesn't have faith in himself. It's a dark poem. I mean, it's definitely it's not uplifting. You know, it's tough. You know, at one point he says, "And the faith killer that has burned my spirit to ash, that shames me into the lost specter hiding in the shadows." I mean, it doesn't get much darker than that, right? So we're definitely dealing with somebody who's having a profound spiritual and metaphysical crisis, and trying to come to terms with it. In that sense, that turn from the abstract and the general down to the personal is extremely effective poetry, right? And I pointed that out, so it's really well done.
I do agree. Thank you very much, Colin and Jean.
Well, I thought this was just an excellent, excellent piece. A lot of points made to consider, and I thought it was well expressed. And it's so unlike what I'm used to hearing from Dan that it kind of took me back a second and kind of listened my way through. But it was definitely very well written, and I think it was just incredibly done. Very thought-provoking. And if not thought-provoking, it definitely will make you think twice about what you already think. And I like that. So let's just do it that way. Great job, Dan. Thanks for sharing with us. Okay. The next thing I'm going to put up is by Naomi Sarah. And I have not seen her on the phone line, so here we go. Too Damn Rinsed Out by Naomi Sarah. The TV buzzes in the background, and I know you're there, slumped across the couch as I sit staring into the empty spaces. Spaces once filled with our laughter at corny jokes or just a way that old fridge would rattle and shake in long, hard moans like it was actually coming. I take a sip of coffee, left sitting too long, gone cold again. A pity how life just sucks, the hot out of something when you're too busy, running around doing other things. Like us, right, baby? Remember how I stained my wedding dress the day we married? One hell of a messy blur. We were back then, you and me. Rolling over in the clover and unafraid as the falling rain pelting me down through crashing thunder. I washed that friggin' dress so many times, wanting to make everything all perfect, pretty again, till nothing was left but a dirt damp drip, just like our I love yous, a stinking pile left unforgotten, rotting in the bottom of that rusted old washing machine, the one we threw out 5 years ago. Guess it was just about the time we started trying to clean up our mess, wanting to be all shiny, brand new, better jobs, bigger house, shiny new cars, a new fridge. I'll never forget us for wasting the dawn. Back in those days, everything was simpler, even though more confused. No outside reward will forgive us now. No need to sugarcoat. We've just gone cold. Any poem?
Great read. Great read. Thank you so much. And thank you, Naomi, for bringing this piece. We all write about love. It's one of the great passions is the wrong word. Love is an emotion that is universal, possibly the most powerful, And we all ride a train through life. Let's call that train love. And some trains make the appropriate stops and proceed on to their destiny without any problem. And some trains have all kinds of problems. They get stuck on sidings. They have a rough job getting through winter snow drifts, perhaps. But trains need to continue. No matter how hard it is, they ride those rails from one destination to the other destination. And in a way, the train analogy works from the point of view of a trip through life and what happens. And you know, a lot of marriages, a lot of loves just go belly up. And she expresses that so well. She uses metaphors, especially the one about the washing machine, which is so good, which is tied to the title, I'm All Rinsed Out. I thought she did a great job with this. It travels deep inside of who she is and how she feels. It's cleverly worded. I think it's a great share. Thank you, Naomi. And Colin, how about you?
Yeah, I think that any effective poem has a central metaphor or a central point that has to hold the entire apparatus together. And I really thought this idea of the stain, right, in the dress, I don't know what it is, but it's there. And it basically is the thing that is the problem that's too large to solve. And not only that, it destroys the sentimentality of marriage, right? There's this romantic idea, right, of the marriage that's going to work out with the white dress and everything that's going to be perfect. But in this case, there's something there. There's an underlying fundamental problem that usurps the entire relationship, right, and destroys it. Right, and she tried to wash that freaking dress so many times, trying to make everything all perfect and pretty again, till nothing was left but a dirt damp drip. Right, because you know, the dirty part of the dress was more fundamental and more enduring than the rest of the dress, which was the romantic apparatus or you know, scenario that was basically constructed around the dress itself. So I think that's really well done. And again, that's the hallmark of effective poetry, is being able to hold it all together in a central image or a central metaphor.
That was a great read. I do agree with your conclusions. Thank you. Now to what our fearless leader has to say about this.
Well, your fearless leader says. Now that feels, I feel like that should be Simon Says. Sorry, I had to behave myself. Okay, let me see what I have. I thought that was a great piece, Naomi. I thought that it was sad, but the emotions were well conveyed throughout. And I think that it was very well done. The imagery was spot on for what you were trying to do. And I think that, yeah, it was really, just really a great piece. So I want to thank you for sharing that with us. Okay, and for the last piece for tonight, I'm going to put up one by Poetic Picasso. So here we go.
Sometimes I want to dive into the ocean of your ebony eyes, plunge into the depth of their passion, and get lost in waves, till I can wake up in the gentle bosom of your blossoming love, and feel the soothing embrace of the tickling winds off the shore. I just want to see the sparkling glow of your enchanted eyes, the magic of your afternoon smile, and hear your sweet voice. When I think about you, I seem to think about the purity of love, the fresh ocean in radiance of a morning shine of the sun. I walk the edge of the beach in search of a glimpse of your beauty, knowing that if I look closely, I would find you bathing in waters with the sprinkles of my love and glitter of the pieces of my heart, and if you gather them, you would form the letters of your name. It must be your seductive spell that keeps me afloat after I dive into the great fastidity of the abounding currents of your love, where I just can't plunge far enough to want to rise up for a short breath, because I can lose myself in the romantic drenching of your kiss. How deep is your love that I can reach the touch of your lips, and for me to know as I submerge what I mean to you in the end. All I ever need is for you to see how much your love means to me. And I can swim the entire ocean if you want me to find you there. How deep is your love? Oh, how deep is your love? Mi amor. Oh, mi amor.
Wow. Press stop. Well, I don't know how much time we have left, but this is truly a case of losing oneself completely in another person. Swimming in an ocean is a great metaphor for that. And he graces the act with some incredible poetic lines. I think we're down to under a minute, so I just want to give Colin a real brief chance to say something about this.
Sure. You know, I'm old enough to remember the song that inspired this, right, the Bee Gees song. And the cadence and the rhythm of the poem kind of follow the song, right, and are thematically similar. And it's a great send-up, right, to the song, which I think this is. And unlike, you know, some of the other stuff tonight, this is ending on a more positive note. And you know, there's a lucky individual that gets this directed to her.
Thank you, Colin. I appreciate that. And Jean, please.
Okay. Well, great audio for sure, Frank. And I want to thank you for sharing that with us tonight. And so everyone knows, Heart Center Park Saint at 12:30 tonight. Pam Ray is filling in for Aphasiana. So anyone who wants to call in and show her a little love, I'm sure she would very much appreciate that. And you all take care of yourselves. Colin, thanks for hanging with us all night. I really appreciated it. It was a pleasure to have you, as always. Laurent, thanks for coming.
A lot of fun. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, we're happy to have you any night. You know that. So, and we're here every Friday.
Happy birthday, you crazy gal.
Oh, yeah, finally it's my birthday. Yes, yes, yes. Tuesday was too early. But anyway, we're not on the air, so it's all good now. But you guys have a great weekend and enjoy yourselves. And thanks for sharing your poetry and your voices with this great family.
It's all a real
comment.
Pleasure, huh?
Thanks, Ron.
Absolutely. Good night, guys.
Good night, everyone. Hope to see you again.
Good night.